Hello and welcome to another episode of Raising CJ. This, just to let you know, this is take two of this episode. We did attempt to do it a week ago, which is why there's a 3 week gap instead of our normal two. We tried, but like our dog was making noise, our cats were meowing, Cadence was being really fussy. And after 15 minutes, we're like, this is terrible. We have to scrap it. So this is take two of episode 12. I'd like to announce that.
Did you want to introduce us?
Oh, yeah. I forgot the normal thing because of take two, probably.
Mm-hmm.
So I am Alex, and my lovely wife and co-host is
Bethany.
And this is Raising CJ. You already know that. Anyway, so my big announcement is I finally put the baby to bed. I just put the baby to bed.
You just did it.
I just did it.
Just like the book.
So in our previous episode, we talked about how people told us, oh, we just put our baby to bed. And we're like, what? That's not possible for us. We have to like do a whole rocking and walking around and bouncing, and she has to fall asleep in her arms. Well, I think as she's gotten older, when she's, or, you know, she's hit
more than 21 weeks,
4 months. I think she grew into the stage, at least for her, that she could do that now. So there was the first time I was doing our normal routine and she was tired, but she just was not going to fall asleep. So finally I thought, you know what, I'm going to try this, just put the baby to bed thing. And I did it and it worked. And I was like, wow.
How long did she stay awake before she fell asleep?
I'm not sure. I wasn't staring at her in the monitor the whole time.
But if I recall, it was like 10 minutes.
10 to 15 minutes, I imagine.
Of her just kind of looking around in her crib.
And we, you know, had her mobile on.
Mm-hmm.
Which we've previously talked about as a gadget and all that. So. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes for like 30 minutes, so it was able to keep her entertained while she fell asleep. And then the next night, I did it again. And then the third night, I tried it, and she wasn't having it that night. And we went back to kind of our normal routine. But so as of now, I think I've done it like 5 times. So.
And she just fell asleep now.
We just did it now, so maybe that's number 6.
Yep. Well, she's, I guess, wiggling her hand a little, but eyes are closed. So, yeah, it seems to be working. Not every night, but getting closer to that, which is good. Self-soothing is good. She can once in a while do it for a nap, but we're still working on that.
Which brings me to my next point I wanted to talk about, which is how I've really become self-aware of how she is outgrowing certain stages or outgrowing like her routine being able to work, you know, like, oh, I outgrew that, dad. We have to do a different routine now. You know, it's kind of what it feels like.
Sure.
So even in the goodness of she can be put to bed, I'm kind of like, oh, we're not going to do the old thing anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that's good. It's progress, but,
mm-hmm. I know what you mean.
Yeah. It's also like, oh, she's not going to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. She's outgrown that. Mm-hmm. And looking back, now that we've had over 4 months to think, we always keep saying the first 2 months were the hardest. That's, mm-hmm. if you were to tell parents, it's like, get through those first two and then it gets a little easier. And just stuff like that. Now that I can look back, I can look back and think of that we've gone through like 3 iterations of our go to sleep routine.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And she's needed different things for naps and also feeding at different times and frequency and stuff. So I've seen a little bit of that, but probably the most dramatic thing is the going to bed, because it is kind of the hardest part of the day when you know she's tired and she needs to go to sleep and you got to make sure it happens. You know, conditions generally have to be just right. And,
yeah,
you know, so that's a pretty noticeable thing to be.
Right. And it can throw a wrench into your routine, obviously. But it's like, oh, if that's not going to work, then what's the new thing?
Yeah.
I mean, usually figure it out, but makes things interesting.
And she is continuing to mostly sleep through the night. I'd say twice a week, maybe three times. She still gets up, but gets up once. And my big thing is I'm really angry at Huggies diapers, Huggies Snug and Dry, which I bought on a whim because they were on clearance. And I guess I know why. Because two nights now.
Sorry, Pampers, we cheated on you.
Yeah, not consecutively, but two nights now. She's woken up and she's been, her clothes have been wet. So she wet through the diaper, which is just so frustrating because then you got to do a whole clothes change and she's angry and it's a little bit more to get her calmed down and it's a little bit stressful. And I remember towards the beginning of our podcast early on, we talked about how we were using Up and Up diapers and they were pretty much as good as Pampers. And I would have to say, I want to go back on that. I really think Pampers are their own class of diaper.
Sure.
Up and Up are still pretty good. They have never had this leak through problem that Huggies this did.
The problem with Up and Up was the color indicator
is not very good.
Didn't really work very well.
And I also think they just get a little bit bulkier, soggier. I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain where compared to Pampers. So whatever the, you know, probably eco terrible gel in Pampers is that soaks up is super absorbent material is really superior. And then Up and Up is pretty good, but definitely not buying these Huggies.
Pampers aren't again. Like super expensive, are they?
Yeah, they're pretty expensive. They're the most expensive. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Other than like, you know, Honest Company and all that.
What about like Loves or something?
I think those are cheaper maybe than Huggies. Huh. I'm not sure.
Oh.
But you, there's always a coupon for Pampers at Target. They always have a cartwheel thing, which brings it down a little. It's still, I mean, Up and Up diapers are like half of what Pampers cost. So it's a pretty big cost difference. Of course, we're doing pretty well because right now, 3 days a week during the day, we're using cloth diapers, so that seems to make a difference on the diapers that we go through.
Right.
But yeah, I always look for a deal for Pampers or if there's like a get a gift card thing or something. We also just bought a giant box at Sam's Club, so I guess we didn't use a coupon for that.
But it was bulk discount.
Yeah. So anyway.
I'm surprised they're the most expensive though.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't think they... I don't know. I guess I just look in the shelves when we're in there. I mean, they all seem within a couple bucks.
Well,
I don't look that closely.
Maybe the brand name ones, but yeah, like the generic diapers are
sure
considerably less.
Okay.
Anyway, I don't even want to disparage the brand or anything. It's just like so disappointing. It's like, oh man, don't do this to me. Don't let me down like this. It's so important.
Sure.
So the commercial where the baby's sleeping through the night in the Pampers is evidently quite accurate.
Wow. So Pampers one, Huggies negative one. So the super cute thing Cadence started doing was she figured out how to fake cough.
Mm-hmm.
I think she maybe coughed for real a couple times and then like figured out how to make the noise. So she just kind of does this like, and right away we were like, what is this noise? What are you doing? We were a little worried, but then we just realized what it was.
Because she'd be like smiling and doing it. Yeah. She seemed to enjoy it.
She's learning how to make sounds, and that one is pretty cute. I think we took a video of her doing it on her phone, so I'll maybe try to plug in that audio here. And we're back from that super cute clip.
And also, we had our visit from the public health nurse. I guess it's probably been 2 weeks ago now. And kind of talking about developmental things. And she said, oh, she'll probably start grabbing her feet and that kind of thing soon. And she definitely started to do that. She also likes to, we have a stroller with a cup holder bar across the front of it. I don't even know what you would call that. Tray for the kiddos. That she can't, like, reach by any means yet, but she puts her little feet up on it, and it's really cute. She loves to have her feet up in the air. So she's, you know, got these little personality quirks that are starting to come out, which is just really fun.
Yeah, she likes to kick back like a boss.
Yeah.
That's what I kind of think of. All right, so Bethany kind of wanted to go on a little monologue here about some things we've been dealing with or you've been dealing with recently regarding lactation and kind of the pressure to produce. So
yeah,
go ahead and take it away.
It's been a couple weeks now, but it's actually been a while that we finally started to do a little bit of supplementation with formula, and it's really like 12 ounces a week probably is all we've ever really needed. But when we first had to start doing that, I felt just terrible about it, and I really had a hard time. And it came about because she was eating a lot at daycare, more than I was able to pump at work, or even, you know, by trying to pump before and after, or before work and then once more in the evening, I still wasn't really getting enough for the bottles that she needed throughout the day, or just barely keeping up. So it was really stressful and hard, but we together decided we would just add a little bit of formula, and I had a lot of guilt about that, but eventually it was working, and we went to the doctor, and she was gaining weight and doing well, and so I kind of felt better about it. But I've also had some problems with my pump, just some discomfort, and I've tried, I think, 4 different types of flanges or something. I've, like, bought so many of these things, and I'm still not really getting what I feel like is a good fit or a discomfort-free fit. So I decided to make an appointment with the lactation aftercare staff at the hospital where we had the baby, because they offer that support for pumping. And so I went in. They were even open on a Saturday to do that, which was really nice. So I was able to just go while Alex could be home with Cadence, and I toted my pump over there. And I saw someone who was very nice, but she had never pumped before. And so basically she was just like, you know, it's like a by the book thing. Like, she kind of looked at my fitting and she said, oh, that looks pretty good. And she asked, you know, she said, you know, if you turned on the suction, does it feel better? And it did. The thing about that is that it takes longer to pump. And so you're supposed to make it the highest suction level that's still comfortable. So I guess if you knock it back down a little, I was trying to maybe push it just because I'm trying to get more to produce. The only thing is that's a catch 22 because, you know, can have your dog bark during a podcast. Well, anyway, there are many trade-offs between different things like that. So then I told her, I kind of expressed this concern, like, I'm already pumping so often, so if it takes longer, that's a little bit stressful for me at work. Not because I'm not being allowed the time I need to pump, but really just because I already do it 3 times. And, you know, it takes at least 20 minutes. And so it sort of eats into your productivity time, or really just gets to be kind of a drag. And I want to be able to, and I did mention to her that we're using some formula. And then she kind of got into that, and she's telling me these things that I can do to produce more milks. And I don't know why, because really I wasn't there to talk about milk production. I knew that they would offer that support if I wanted to, but we just got into it. And she started saying, well, you should add another session of pumping in at work if you can, and you should get up at pump at night if you can. And I'm like, well, I already do that. And she's like, well, maybe do it twice and then pump again in the evening. And so she had all these suggestions, and it was just like ridiculous to me what was being asked of me. And I walked out of there and I called Alex, and I
sounds like you'll be hooked up to the thing.
Yeah.
24/7.
And she did say that. She's like, I know it sounds like you'll be chained to the pump, but you got to remember it's only a short amount of time and all this. And I get that. But at the same time, it's kind of funny to me because she's pregnant and she's going to have a baby in a few months. And I kind of want to just check back with her after she's been back. I don't know if she works full time, but, you know, and be like, so how's that, you know, asking me to pump 7 times a day thing going for you? Or maybe she'll be really lucky and she'll be someone who has but I'm not in everyone's that camp different. Right. Yep. So I walked out of there and I called Alex, and I just started crying as soon as I started talking to him, because it just seemed like this standard that I could not meet. And I think about, if I'm getting up twice at night to pump and I'm pumping 4 times a day at work, you know, this is only going to stress me out even more, and I'm going to be even more tired. And what kind of a mother am I going to be if that's, you know, how could that possibly be worth it? And if anything, it kind of made me realize it was like a gut check. Like, no, what we, the decision we made to supplement with what isn't even amounting to being very much formula, the trade-off there of not having to do what I felt like was kind of an extreme version of pumping is worth it to me. But it's, I think they've gone, we were talking about this with actually the nurse who visits us, the public health nurse, about how there's a really good breastfeeding support within the community now, and especially at the hospital. But it's sort of gone to the other extreme where it's a little bit militant, like this expectation that you're going to do it and you'll do whatever it takes. And it's really hard and it's really time consuming. And sometimes it's painful and there's a whole a ton of emotions tied into it because of course I want to make sure that I'm getting this, you know, it's a beautiful thing to be able to like make this nutrition for your baby and the cuddles and everything is wonderful. But then there's also this stress if you don't feel like you have enough and how do you get and maintain that supply? So I think they could ease off a little bit. And I maybe kind of understand why the hospital is doing it, because if you let people off the hook too easily, then maybe no one would do it anymore. And we'd go back to like 50 years ago, I think breastfeeding had become pretty uncommon in formula.
Not even 20 years ago.
Okay, sure.
Your Aunt Sarah said with her boys, because formula was brand new and that was the thing, it was supposed to be better, right?
No.
Was someone else saying that?
No, she was saying it about my grandma having her children. Yeah.
Okay, then I am wrong.
Yeah. I don't know the history of formula and all that, but I do have a feeling, just as with any industry, that as soon as there's something like that available, you know, like the hospital says they don't offer formula samples anymore, but I bet there was a time they did, and
right,
you know, who wouldn't take that, you know, take that as a route.
It's always changing. So
it's always
time,
changing, especially
formula was,
they were marketing that it was healthier. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so they've switched from, you know, to we don't support formula at all, and it's maybe stressful. And my other observation, which only really applies to the situation that I've been in the hospital that we've used, is that it's possible that this aftercare lactation clinic is most helpful immediately after the baby's birth, because they were awesome. You know, I really credit them with the good luck we had in the beginning. But the further away we've gotten from the birth, the less helpful I feel like it's been, or the less realistic the expectations have been, or maybe the less understanding of what the situation is really like. And that just makes sense because they are right within the birthing center. So they primarily see those babies right away. And, you know, working full time and pumping is a whole different game than trying to get an initial latch on.
It might even be hard for them to switch the mindset of a newborn mother versus a mother of a 5-month-old who's back at work.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know. But
and we also
give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, no, and I do want to give them, because I am so glad that they exist. But there's also been, you know, the amount of milk that they said that she needs is just totally off this
versus what our pediatrician said.
So this person I saw said she should only need 1 ounce of milk per hour she's away from you during the day, which doesn't make any sense because she's apart from me for 9 hours, which would mean that she'd only need 9 ounces, but she's supposed to take 30 to 40 ounces of milk, according to our pediatrician, a day. So how does the math on that work out? They're really stuck on this idea, this, I can't even remember what the name of it is. It's some like weird, starts with an M, magic number, about how babies, because the adjust your milk is supposed to adjust protein and fat as they grow, so they don't need continually more and more the way formula fed babies do. And so when she started needing more and more milk, I got really nervous about it. But it turns out that's perfectly fine and normal. She's growing really well with that amount of milk. And so to be stuck on this idea that, you know, once they reach 2 months, that from 2 to 6 months, they're going to need the same amount of milk is, well, it's not what's been working for us. So That's what that lactation clinic said. So I just don't know that they're being as realistic. And they're also really down on daycare providers. Like, yeah, your daycare provider is going to ask for more milk just because that the baby wants that for comfort, but they don't really need it. And maybe that's true, but maybe it isn't. And I'm not going to have my daycare provider not feed my baby. You know, she's not wasting milk. Cadence is eating it all. And so that's what we're going to go with. And it's just having to make those decisions. So I would.
And just realizing that it's okay. You don't have to follow exactly what they think you should do.
Yeah, exactly. You know? You want to because I trust them so much, right? Because it went so well in the beginning. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if someone told me that they had a similar experience, where the further away from that birth you get with the birthing center lactation clinic, the more difficult it is to line up those expectations with what reality is. And I certainly would never want to put pressure on anyone to be I would never want to put pressure on anyone to feel like they have to exclusively breastfeed. And if they have to supplement, they're doing the wrong thing. I would want us to all be a little bit more understanding, I think.
For sure.
And some of the working moms I've talked to about this have said, yeah, we had to supplement or whatever. And it's almost like a feeling of shame about it. And I feel like that's unfortunate, you know, especially when,
right,
I don't know a single mom who didn't just do the absolute best she could.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't know if there's a term for that. We should start one, like formula shaming.
Yeah,
you know,
I know.
Supplemental shaming. I don't know. That's what it feels like.
Which is why I might have plugged it again or before in a past episode, but the podcast, The Boob Group, is, I think it was really helpful to me while I was going through that sort of emotional crisis of having to use formula, because they were that podcast. I've only listened to a few episodes, but I'll listen to more as I get more time or as I have more questions, because they really are very generous about any situation you might be in, from someone who never wants a drop of formula to pass the baby's lips to someone who is in a totally different situation and everything in between. So if you're looking for a resource that's a little bit more inclusive, that podcast, The Boob Group, is a good one. And I don't know if you're a dad who likes podcasts. Alex hasn't listened to it except in the same room as me, but I think it might be a good thing to turn on, because it's probably really hard for a partner to support the mom. You know, there's so much tied into this, you know, the hormones and the emotions.
I certainly didn't get the big deal.
Yeah, what's the big deal?
I didn't get the big deal when we like had to give her one bottle of formula every other day, you know, and that really tore you up. And I mean, I understand now, but you know, it's not the same for the dad.
So. Yeah. So that's kind of my rant about that.
Why don't we roll right into Bethany's baby gadget of the week?
Yeah. What was that again?
It is the Think Dirty app.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You want me to do it again?
No, I suppose you have to.
And so now it's time for Bethany's baby gadget of the week.
Yeah, so this week the gadget of the week is actually an app that I learned about while in shopping in Target. I was in the lotion aisle, and this mom was looking at sunscreen for her kids, and she was like talking on the phone to, I believe it was her mother-in-law, and she's like, no, that one gets a 9 on the Think Dirty app. We're not getting that one. And I just said, you know, there's more sunscreens over in the baby aisle, organic ones. That was all I said. She had two babies with her. And it was none of my business, but I did say that just in case it was helpful. And so she like got off the phone with her mother-in-law, I believe it was, as I said. And she said, yeah, but, you know, have you ever heard of this app? It tells you everything about all these different products, and it rates them 0 to 10 based on the ingredients. And I kind of thought it sounded like a little bit crackpotty. I don't know, like maybe you're going a little extreme there, but I do read ingredients on beauty products. I try to avoid things with parabens in them, but we're also on a budget. So it's sort of, you know, I do what I can, but sometimes you can't avoid it. But I did look into getting the app.
Yeah, because apparently you were spending too much money on Pampers, I guess.
Yeah. because she said the baby Gannix sunscreen is actually not rated the best or something. She's like, some of those that say they're organic are not even the best. And I was like, oh, baby Gannix is what I buy. So I want to see what the heck this app is talking about.
Sure.
And I really like it. I really like the app. It's so good. They have over 700,000, 70, I can't say numbers. They have a lot of products on there, close to 800,000 products. And virtually, there's only been two things I've scanned, and I'm like going scan crazy that haven't been on the app. And it's really helpful because there's so many chemicals in what we use, and in the United States it's not regulated as much as it is in other places, for better if you're a business or for worse if you're a consumer, I think. And it's easy to just buy something that says it's organic or has a cute organic label, but then to know,
or marketed to look natural.
Marketing, yes, that's a big one too.
It's just marketing.
Yeah,
you really gotta read.
Yeah, and you're just like trying to, you're sitting, yeah, you're in the aisle, and you've got a baby, yeah, with you, you're trying to pick something out, you're doing the best you can. So it's nice to have this app where you can just scan the barcode, yeah, and it'll tell you if there's,
can
something,
say something quick
that, yeah,
I work in the food industry, and there's no governing on using the word natural. Whereas if you say organic, then you have to be certified organic, and there's standards for that. But anyone can say something's natural, and there's no penalty, or there's no proof, or there's no natural certification. Mm-hmm. So that's one that is used a lot, and anyone can use it, whether it's true or not.
Sure, and like something for sunscreens, the American Cancer Association might give it a certification, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's free of reproductive toxicity or whatever. There's just a bunch of stuff that you can put in products. And again, I'm not crazy about like trying to purge everything, but I do think when you sort of add it up, all the stuff, especially as a woman, because we tend to use more products, all the stuff that you put on your body, and you sort of start to think about does that add up? Is there bioaccumulation of these different things? And also, since I'm breastfeeding and I'm trying to be pretty good for Cadence, just to keep some of that extra junk out of her system. And I also like, one good example, I think, is Johnson & Johnson's lavender baby bubble bath, which we use. And I read the ingredients and they seem pretty innocuous. It seemed pretty good, but there is fragrance in it, which makes it automatically a 9 on this Think Dirty app, because fragrances, I guess, can have bad stuff in them, but there's no, like, it just says fragrance, and that could be anything. So I that's kind of like a hole, in my opinion, in the app, that it just automatically has a 9, which is a 10 is a bad score, 0 is a good score, if it has fragrance, because nobody knows what that fragrance is. But sometimes they can be really bad and have developmental, sure, and reproductive toxicity.
So they're probably assuming the worst if you're not going to specify,
yeah,
the fragrance.
Right. Like, there is Burt's Bees ointment that we use, baby ointment, and that says on it natural fragrance or something, fragrance from natural sources, and that has a 0 score. So I think if you disclose what your fragrance is, it's not automatic. But anyway, so that baby bath and Cadence, we talked about the speckles on her skin that the doctor didn't know what they were. Mm-hmm. So I've been trying really hard to
remedy that.
Like, I switched to fragrance free soap for her laundry, and also instead of using dryer sheets, I got these wool dryer balls. And then I realized that, oh no, this Johnson & Johnson stuff that I thought was okay, had relatively few ingredients compared to other stuff, it might actually be irritating her skin. So I was able to switch to Honest Company has a good bubble bath. Funny story about that. I accidentally bought the shampoo body wash instead of the bubble bath. And so, but it turns out it makes bubbles just as well. And I don't really know that she needs, but I don't know if she cares, but it's more fun for me if she gets a bubble bath. So I really like that app. And especially if you're thinking that you might have a child with sensitive skin, or if you yourself use a lot of products and you're kind of curious about your exposure, you can go ahead and play around with it. That is the baby gadget of the week, mom to mom recommendation.
All right. Good one. Tech. So developmental wise, anything? I know we think she might be on the verge of starting separation anxiety.
Yep, she's starting to kind of reach out for me when I leave her at daycare, when I pick her up, which is sweet. I feel like she's kind of recognizing that bond and maybe misses me a little more. And also, we've had an experience sometimes where if she's fussy and I leave the room, she'll just calm down when I come back. And that's pretty typical to onset, you know, around 6 months and, or, you know, we're a little maybe early. The bump newsletter that I get in my email inbox every month said that it could start now. And I sort of thought we might be seeing signs of that. So another mom we just visited with yesterday said it is coming, the time where you drop her off at daycare for the first time and she cries when you leave her. Because even the first day when I left her, it's not like she cried. She didn't care. I was crying. So I was like, oh my gosh, that's going to be so hard. And so it's kind of good to know, to prepare. Okay, this is going to happen. It's important milestone for her to be, you know, learning these social things. But it's also hard. I don't want her to be sad as much as I want her to continue to grow and develop. And then the other one is she's also, I think, kind of on the cusp of learning to sit. She can just for a little bit kind of sit with her hands on the floor, but we are still right there kind of keeping her balanced. But I'm excited for that. I've heard from multiple moms that it gets a lot easier when they can sit up and just kind of play with toys on their own. They're a lot happier than just trying to lay, you know, and reach things. But when they can sit up and see a little better. So that's exciting. You can kind of plop them down and also I like it because, you know, right now, unless she's on her tummy, her head is laying against something. And so I worry about flat head or the bald spot she's getting on her.
She's definitely got the bald spot.
Yeah. And so we try to limit her time in different, on her back. But, you know, there's only so much you can do because you're either holding her, she's on her tummy, which she only likes for a little while, or she's on her back. So yeah, she's growing and, like we said, kind of getting her own little personality starting to show, which is exciting.
Absolutely. She's getting chubby.
She's getting chubby.
We love it.
Yeah.
Well, how do you think this went? Better?
Much better.
There weren't any wolves howling or babies crying, so I think it was a success.
Yeah. Take two was worth it.
All right, so thanks for listening. Please remember to rate and review us, or please like us or follow us. Visit our website, raisingcj.com. You can subscribe to our emails, and you will get notifications every time a new episode is posted. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.